Well, I'm sad that Tim is sick. I hope he feels better, but I always appreciate the opportunity to speak. I will confess, occasionally I like to aggravate Tim, and so to add to his stress, I texted him just a few minutes ago, which you should not be texting in service, but I'm confessing, so it's okay. I texted him that I needed some help to decide what to speak on tonight, and I know that causes him great anxiety, so I'm sure he's feeling better, so y'all pray for him. Well, yeah, when I got the call from Mark, I was like, yeah, I'm happy to do it, Mark. On what? So I was thinking, I thought I'm going to speak to you on one of the things I spoke to while I was in Brazil in May, but in English. So I pulled out my notes and realized they were all in Portuguese, so I left them at home. They wouldn't help anyway, so we're going to just go off of Matthew 7 here. Yeah, I just went to Brazil, spent a month there, took 12 OC students, do this every year. This is the fourth year, I think. Appreciate the elders for giving me this flexibility. Macy Lewis went with us. She was one of those that went. These trips are always very memorable. You get to know people really well and make some good friends. And you should ask her sometime about one of the special friendships she developed on the trip. She would be thrilled to talk about that. He's a nice young man. Anyway, that's probably enough. So Macy had a good time. The trip was great. We went to five different cities, worked with six different churches. I spoke 15 times. We had devotionals most of the days as a group. Through that, some conversations came out. One of the young men that went with us decided to get baptized, so I had the privilege of baptizing him. By this time, we're at the very end of our trip, spending a few days at Rio, just to sightsee, and I baptized him in the ocean, which I thought, oh, this could be lovely. It was about 10 at night. But the ocean in Rio is, there's a lot of waves, so we had to time it in between waves, and that was kind of interesting. One of the waves came and went over both of us, and he came out of it. He said, did that count? I was like, no, let's do this again. So we got baptized 2-3 times, but I think one of them counted. So it was an enjoyable time. But glad to be back. So Tim's been talking about heaven, right? Heaven and hell and the afterlife and judgment and things to come. I want to talk to you about heaven, but on this side of it, on this side of eternity. In Matthew, Matthew introduces Jesus as the promised Savior. He's writing to the Jews about their Jewish backstory and the promised Messiah, the anointed that would come and would, in a sense, make Israel great again, is really what they were expecting. And so, a couple of you got that, that's good. And he introduces Jesus as a fulfillment of prophecy, as the descendant of two important people that God had made promises to, Abraham and David. He has his birth and a lot of things surrounding his early childhood there is very symbolic and connects to the backstory. And he is to be called Emmanuel. I think we call him Jesus, right? But Emmanuel wasn't to be his name. It was descriptive of his purpose and his identity and mission. And Emmanuel means God with us, which is huge for the Jews, huge because it is the presence of God that made them a nation. It's the presence of God through representatives like Moses and the 10 plagues, powerful acts that freed them from slavery and death. It's molded them through the law and through the tabernacle that was the presence of God and leaders and prophets to mold them into a nation, to be the kingdom of God, a set apart kingdom, a holy kingdom, and to show the world what does it look like to be under the rule of God, which is what Genesis 1 and 2 is about, the rule of God. Well, but sin enters the world, as we know, and things got sticky and cruel pretty quick and went a mess of stuff and all kinds of kingdoms and conflicts and wars and destructions and exiles and death and paganism and on and on and on. But Jesus is God with us. And then in chapter 4, verse 17, thus the kingdom of heaven has come near. So repent. Turn around from the mess that Israel's been in. Turn around from the mess that everybody else has been in. And come back to the presence of God to be his kingdom. A heavenly kingdom. Do you understand heaven just isn't on the other side of death? We're to live heaven now, towards a complete rule of God on the other side of eternity. But you also understand that hell is not just on the other side of eternity. Hell is also a reality now. And so the plan, the power of God, the presence of God pushes out darkness and death and chaos and destruction. Just like in Genesis 1, it's the presence of God that brings beauty and order and life to the chaos and darkness described. Just like in John, we're covering John, right? Sunday morning, just like in John, John 1, Jesus is the presence of God with us who comes to bring life because death has been ruling this mess that we call life. We call this world. And so the presence of God, Jesus, God with us, Emmanuel, brings God's rule near, life near. And so the kingdom of heaven is pushing hell out of this world to be completed on the other side of eternity, where we will live completely heaven or completely the hell that in part we're living now. And it's the presence of God that makes the difference. Jesus, Emmanuel. So Matthew, the kingdom of heaven is near. All right. So Jesus makes that bold statement in Matthew chapter 17, chapter 4, verse 17. Then chapter 5, 6, and 7 is, we call it the Sermon on the Mount, but it's really the good news of the kingdom of heaven is what Jesus is going to speak to us about. But at the end of chapter 4, all the misfits, the people on the outskirts of society, the broken, the lame, the hurt, the poor, the neglected, the rejected, are the first people that Jesus talks to about the kingdom of heaven, who has come to be near. He offers the kingdom to all the wrong people, as society would measure it. Even Israel would measure it. And then we have the Sermon on the Mount. Then he comes to chapter 7, verse 1. Do not judge, or you too will be judged. Now, that's probably one of the most quoted verses by non-religious people. If you do a Google search of celebrities that use this verse when they got caught in a mess, it's quite a few. You know, because we kind of don't judge people, and we don't want to be judged, and we don't want to be judgmental. About 13 years ago, the Barna Institute did this major, massive study of 10,000 people interviewed that claim no religious affiliation. And a lot of things came out of that study, including they were to choose top three words to describe faith and Christianity and religion. Number one, this isn't positive, by the way. Number one, we're judgmental. That's how 10,000 people sees us, or sees Christianity. Number two, hypocritical. The things we judge others on, we do not live. Number three, anti-gay. Those three things right there. That's how 10,000 people think of Christianity. So, maybe they're right. Jesus talking about the kingdom of heaven, do not judge, or you too will be judged. Now, what is he saying and what is he not saying? That's important, right? The word here, judged, it's the word used, our English word judge is a pretty good one. It fits well. It includes a lot of things. It includes also decision making. So like, you have to choose between what's best. Anybody chocolate or vanilla? I mean, simple, duh. Everybody knows it's chocolate. Okay. What's best? We're going to judge between soccer or anything else. I mean, that's a simple choice as well. Soccer. Those are judgments. Not a moral judgment. It's just a choice, right? So we make judgments all the time, every day. I decided to go with this lovely tie today. That was a judgment. Hopefully not a moral one. Just, I thought this would match. And I chose this without Becky, so it's a risk. But the choices. Is Jesus saying, thou shalt not make choices? Or choices will be made of you? Like, I don't even know where you go with that. Of course, that's not what he's saying. If you read the chapter 5 and 6, he clearly talks about very important choices one must make. He talks about, you have heard it said, thou shalt not commit adultery. They heard that from God, the law. But I tell you, thou shalt not lust. I mean, choices have to be made there. He talks about loving your enemies. Don't hate them. Treat them. Don't be like the pagans. Choices have to be made. So that's not what he's condemning. Another way is when people are selected to make choices of what's best. I don't know, a pie eating contest. And so a few people are chosen to be judges or some kind of, I don't know, award ceremony of some sort or another. People are chosen, empowered to pass an assessment on what they think is best. And we understand that. We do that as a group. We do that as people. We do that as families. Are we going to, today we were trying to decide where to eat. Well, that's a judgment that our family had to make. I would say not all of them were in accord. Our family hardly ever is in accord where we're going to eat. But a judgment must be made. Surely that's not what Jesus is also saying. We as a group can never decide on anything. I mean, that's absurd, because God is calling Israel to be a kingdom set apart from the other kingdoms. Thus, some choices must be made, right? Well, then there's also a legal term, like somebody is empowered and trained and prepared and skilled to make a legal assessment, which is much more complex, right? That's why you gotta go through school and all kinds of other things, not easily attained to be a judge, because you have to know so much, because a lot is at stake, and those are very often complicated, messy realities. So people then have to judge. Maybe saying that, don't, let's not have any legal judgments. Surely that's not it either. He goes on then, for in the same way that you judge others, whatever that means, you will be judged. And with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. So think about this. He's talking about a kingdom, a people that he's calling to himself, to the presence of God. And this people will be different because the presence of God. That requires change, betterment, growth. A lot of what Israel was not, in pagan nations for sure. So Jesus comes uniquely different than all the other ways the presence of God was before, because he is to do something uniquely different and powerful, because all the ways that God was present before, like representatives, through law, through government, through a temple and a bunch of other things, was limited in changing people, the kingdom, those in Israel, limited. People, something wrong with us. A lot of things wrong with us. So change is required. Now, the idea of, I don't know, Christianity, just me, my truck, and Jesus, as this individual thing, I hang out, I do my thing, I drive my car, and I pray occasionally, me and Jesus are tied, and that's religion, is absurd, because God is calling us to kingdom living people. which let me attest to you, spending a month intensely together with 12 college students, it's not always easy. Macy was lovely, but you know, it's not always easy, right? But you cannot do Christianity, you cannot do kingdom, you cannot do the gathered ones of Jesus, which is literally what church means, individually. You cannot do it with an app. You cannot just do it you in Jesus. So there's this interaction with people. And if we are to grow, to get, forgive me here, to get hell out of us, if that's what's to happen, that means change has to occur, and change has to occur relationally so. You following? So you and I, part of God's kingdom because of the presence of God, are to be changed by the presence of God, and we're going to change together and grow. Because we got a lot of things that need to be done better, different, pushed out of us. How do we do that? This is what he's addressing. Judgment, be whatever that is, and we're going to get to it, is not the means that produces the change that you and I have to help along in each other. It's not what produces the change that God wants in us. Have you ever read the Old Testament? Has God brought punishment down on Israel? Had the temple destroyed through the Babylonians, which was historically monumentous to Israel, almost bringing Israel to annihilation as a people. They were almost no more. Like the Babylonians. Anybody know where that is? Have you visited Babylon recently? There's groups of people that just poof, got that close. Israel still didn't change. I mean, changed enough, but then didn't change, and then repeat. So punishment, judgment, whatever all that means, is not the way to produce growth, betterment, kingdom of heaven experience. Because that is the goal of this text. He says, why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank? Okay, so your brother does have something that needs to be some kind of flaw, some kind of sin, something that needs to be changed, addressed, that you have a responsibility in helping along. So the question then is, how do we do that? He says, here in Oklahoma, you know, I get to mow. I had a push. The other day, I have a hand-me-down lawnmower, riding lawnmower, because my father-in-law was compassionate. So I'm mowing like 3 acres, if 4-ish, on a, you know, hand-me-down lawnmower, which is great. It's a riding, it rides. So, but it's kind of, you know, it's intense. And it broke the other day. And I didn't want to leave it because it was going to rain. So 4 hours later, I pushed a lawnmower and thought I was going to die. If you know, Oklahoma has a gentle breeze. And where I live in Piedmont, there's nothing to slow down the gentle breeze. And so it's less gentle. And there's just dust and stuff in my eyes, and I'm over there, and you know, I have something in my eye. Well, in that case, many somethings in my eye, but I need help. Say Becky comes out there to help, and she has a telephone pole on her face, and it's like 50 feet long, and she just, you know, and she has tweezers in her hands. Honey, now I'm good. Because there is something happening where we need to help each other, but there's a way that he calls judgment that does not accomplish the end goal of taking the speck out. You see the imagery. He's going, I think, for some comedy here, the idea of a pole, speck. I think he's trying to make it sound absurd. How could Becky help if she is so, you know, she just can't. She just can't help, even though she wants to. She just cannot help. Verse 4. How can you say to your brother, let me take, the idea of brother here is one of the kingdom. Two disciples, two people of the kingdom of heaven that is brought near because of Jesus. Two people of the church, all the same idea, trying to help each other. How can one say to the other, let me take the speck out of your eye, when all the time there is a plank in your own eye? You hypocrite. Oh, that's the second word that 10,000 non-Christians think of us. You hypocrite. Your claim to help, and you say you're wanting to help, and you say you're trying to help, yet you cannot see your own faults. You know, often it's we use arrogance towards others and ignorance towards self. Because I know my motives. I think I know my motives. Even if I don't, I'm sure they're good. But we use some arrogance toward it. You hypocrite. You cannot help yet. Because, you know, first, there's a process here. Take the plank out, then go take the speck. So he's still wanting us. He's not saying never make assessments, never decide anything. Don't ever say anything about anybody. Don't ever help anybody. Just go, you know, shake hands, smile, and kumbaya, and go do something else. That's not what he's saying. It's how do we help each other, right? Well, this might be helpful. Let's go to James chapter 4. There's a couple disagreements here, but I think this is James, the brother of Jesus. Okay, James, the brother of Jesus. And James here in his letter, about most of it, two-thirds of it, I think is a commentary upon what we call the Sermon on the Mount, or what Jesus calls the good news of the kingdom. And he's applying it to this group of people he's writing to. Then you get to chapter 4, verse 11. Brothers and sisters, so those of the community, right, of the kingdom, don't slander one another. Anyone who speaks against a brother or sister or judges, and that's the same word there in Matthew, judges them, speaks against the law and judges it. When you judge the law, you're not keeping it. There's the plank. But sitting in judgment on it, you and I are, when we have the plank and we try to judge others, we are in a sense judging the process by which God uses to change people. That's not a good thing for you and I to. It's like my 11-year-old son passing judgment upon my parenting abilities, which he does all the time. Now, he's an intelligent kid and, you know, good-looking boy. I'm told he looks like me. But, I mean, but he's 11. He has a huge plank in his face. It's called age difference. 32 years worth of plank in his face that he cannot see past. I know, I don't look that old, but thank you. Yet he's passing judgment upon, it's like you and I passing judgment upon God's methods to bettering humanity. That's what he's saying. So don't do that. Why not? There is only one lawgiver, one judge, the one who is able to save and destroy. The one who is able to save and destroy. Hold on to that. But you, you, who are you to judge your neighbor? Okay, what I think he's talking about. I don't think he means don't ever decide, don't ever assess, don't ever make moral, you know, decision making. That's all. Yes, 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 yes. Do not slander, condemn, assume you know motives behind behaviors. Don't box people. And here's the hypocrisy part. When you are judging others, condemning, slandering, you know, they do something wrong, okay? They do, there's a speck somewhere there. And then you go from that to assessing the motives you think they have, to boxing them in some kind of category that you have for them because of that one sin or moment or sentence or post that they put on Facebook or something. And then you go to tell others what you have decided about them. That's called slandering. So you get some other folks. You can do this on social media or old school. You just walk up to people and you pass all this that you just decided and assessed over here onto other people about them. And here's the hypocrisy. And you think Jesus is right with you, fist pumping you. That's right. That's what I was thinking. As if you and Jesus are one side and the people out here. That's the hypocrisy. That's the hypocrisy. Don't do that. Who are you to do that? Who am I to do that? Where have I been capacitated, empowered, schooled in the divinity of being a God to do that? There's but one judge, one lawgiver, one God. Interesting enough, what did Jesus say when it came to judgment and his role on earth? Did he say, I came to bring judgment upon ye? No, what did he say? The Son of Man did not come to judge, but to give his life. God came to be with us, even though he is capable and will, not to bring condemnation upon us. He came to bring forgiveness, life, now and after death. He came to bring an eternity accessible to us now and on the other side of death. He came to bring love and compassion and grace and mercy. And the only reason I am in the kingdom is because of all that. How dare I then pass condemnation unto you? Slander you. Assess motives that you have, or I think you have. Oh, he's a racist. She's bigoted. He's some. How? Well, did you see that one post? Maybe that is the speck. But you just categorize them. Who? Can you see the plank? So, what do we do? Because we're still to help each other. First, do some homework on you. And I would do it on me. I got to come with the right attitude, with the right recognition, with the right compassion. I got to look at my own life. What are my biases? What might be keeping me from clearly being able to see and thus help the one I'm claiming to want to help? What might be keeping that? Am I consistently allowing the presence of God and inviting others to help work on me? To then go help work on others. Then he comes to this lovely verse. Do not give dogs what is sacred. This is Jesus. Do not throw your pearls to pigs. Because if you do, they may trample them under their feet and turn and tear you to pieces. Who's he calling pigs and dogs? I don't think he's calling anybody pigs and dogs. I think this is like a parable. It's like an illustration. Imagine you have something precious like a pearl. And you're going to go put it on your pet. Which some of you don't have to imagine it, right? You're just putting lovely things on your pet. You're putting something very expensive on your little chihuahua or, I don't know, poodle. Or pig, if that's your thing. But Do you think, I'm sure they look lovely. Do you think they are capable of appreciating the worth of what they wear? We gave our dog a bath the other day, put her out. It started raining. I go to look outside. Where is she? Sitting. We got a patch of, we're still trying to grow some grass there. We got a patch, I often just mow dirt, but we got a patch of now mud, raining, and there's a lot of grass. She's sitting on that mud, just sitting there, raining on her head. Why? Because she's a dog. That's why. What does that mean? What is he illustrating? I don't think he's trying to offend anybody by calling people dogs and pigs. Sometimes you and I have such a pearl, such a worth, I mean, such an amazing, powerful, valuable nugget of God's truth that we want to pass on to somebody. We want to share it with somebody. Like, parents trying to teach their kids something profound. Have you ever rehearsed that, thought about it, and you know, and you sit there with your son and you're doing some work outside or something, you son, let me tell you something about life, and you just say this whole amazing, you're just like, that was brilliant. And then they look at you like they're that dog sitting out in the rain, you know, just wallowing in the mud. Why did my son not grasp the amazing, how brilliant his dad is? Because he's 11 and just not capable. Sometimes you and I try to impart amazing, beautiful, godly wisdom to people that they just cannot understand and recognize and value what's being taught to them. So timing, where you start, how you offer it, what the attitude you come, all that's important. Did we not cover John 4 this morning in class? At least, am I behind? That's what we covered in class. Maybe you did too. The woman at the well. How many issues did she have? First, she's a Samaritan. There's a huge rift. I mean, centuries worth of with the Jews. I mean, some deep ethnic, I mean, huge. Her religion, her perspective of God and the way the Jews did it, there was some conflict there. She was a woman. There's some other conflicts there in that society. And she had had five husbands and was living with some guy. Jesus could have approached her in so many ways. You Samaritan, judgment of God upon you. That's why way back in the day, Israel was destroyed and Samaria was the capital of the north, Israel when it was divided and the Assyria. I mean, so many things that were true. What does he do? He interacts with her first. He talks to her. He sparks curiosity. He treats her with value. And even when he says, yeah, five husbands living with, just leaves it at that. How many places could you go to talk about the things wrong there? Jesus doesn't. And what happens to her? She becomes the means by which a whole village comes to Jesus. By the way, the very next story is Jesus going to feed people. And you might not know this, but geographically he goes to the Samaritan, non-Jewish or half-Jewish group of people. Because I think of that interaction. Timing, approach, where you start. Do you understand? This isn't about don't ever help anybody. It's just about how do we do it? How do we do it? So let's do it. Let's help each other. We need to help each other. But let's do the homework. Let's look at the plank. Let's think about this. Let's show compassion and love. Let's look at our own lives, understand what God has done, and then help others. Let's think of timing and approach and kindness. And here's, if you're on the other side of it, how about you invite some folks in to help you with your spec? Invite some folks. Look around, some people that you think fit a lot of this, and invite them in. Have a cup of coffee. Let me share my life with you. Let me be vulnerable. Let's grow together. Hey, it's not like I'm over here with Jesus and you're over here. We're all over here and Jesus is reaching out. He's God who came. Isn't that good news? Isn't that good news? Maybe you can take this opportunity right now and come and invite some folks to help along. Why don't you come as we stand and sing?